Hello and welcome to Mindfulness Music and More with me, Charlene Ibala-Lucas. As always, it's an absolute pleasure to be here with you and to bring you the fourth season of this podcast focusing on mental health and well-being. In this, the third part of the season, we're focusing on Mental Health Awareness Month in May, and I have the pleasure of speaking to only men from all walks of life about their mental health. Our lineup of guests include mindfulness facilitators, musicians, dancers, photographers, psychologists, and entrepreneurs, all of whom will inspire, inform, entertain, and motivate you. So do stay with me for the next hour as we talk about mental health and mindfulness, play some music, and meditate together. My first guest today is a multi-award winning singer, songwriter, producer, film scorer, musical theatre composer, husband, father, and lover of animals and nature. He comes from a musical family and has been in the music industry for nearly 30 years. He first joined the world of music with a gospel a cappella group, Five Alive, an experience that convinced him to professionally pursue music as a career by joining Barclay Scott of Music in the US. His famous release, Kenya Only, which he later sang in Swahili, Daima Mimi Mkenya, was adopted after the 1998 terrorist bombing in Nairobi as a song of mourning. He's an Mnet South Africa Favorite Male Vocalist Award winner and also Best East African Artist Kora Award winner. His Nchiya Kitu Kidogo release saw him get appointed as an ambassador for Transparency International and Kenya Human Rights Commission. The words he describes himself with are out of my mind. Eric Wainaina, welcome to Mindfulness Music and More.
It's good to be here, Shalini.
Out of my mind. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the most unserious person that you've ever met.
It's absolutely. I have been waiting to get you into the studio for ages because I saw some of your work recently. And as you know, I'm fairly new back to Kenya after 20 odd years. So I have kind of missed the Eric Wainaina craze that has happened over the last few years. You are huge in Kenya. What does that feel like to know that people follow your music, they love your music, and so much so that some of your songs have gone on to become national iconic songs?
Well, I mean, it's always humbling, but I'm always reaching for greater heights, you know. In anything, there's always, we can always be better. There's always those who are greater and lesser than yourself, you know, and you know, I'm always aspiring for more. So I'm honored that some of my material has done that well, but I want all of it to do that well, and I want to write songs that make people feel good about themselves, make people feel like they understand their lives, have a way of negotiating this wonderful quagmire that is just the human existence.
Do you feel, because your music has done so well and people look up to you, is there a sense of responsibility that you need to achieve more?
Well, I feel a sense of responsibility, but also in some ways, and I think a lot of artists get a lot of pressure to be a particular way. I'm heading into a sort of an age in my life where I'm like, it's also kind of up to you, you know, to decide how to live. I mean, sometimes artists get this responsibility of being this societal responsibility falls on your shoulders. And in some ways, I'm just like, I just made some music. You know, there's some ways that I'm going to live up to some stuff and other ways that I won't, you know. I think a lot of young musicians get put under a lot of pressure as well, especially if you come from the church. And they're like, okay, so you come from the church, then you got to live this way. And they're like, no, I'm a kid who's in church and there was a keyboard there and there's a microphone. And I sang some songs, you know. So for me, it's the double-edged sword. In any one point, I try and be myself, you know. I try and make decisions that will not hurt other people, won't hurt me, and yeah.
It's not always easy, though, is it? Because being in the public spotlight brings with it this kind of feeling that some people look at you as a role model. It that happens, right, as a celebrity. And you said you try to do the best you can. Have you always managed to do that in the public eye, or have there been times when it's been a struggle?
The time has been a real struggle, you know, and I mean, but you get through it, you know. And I think the most important thing is a serious examination of oneself, you know, and having people around you who will call you out on your failings, and then also just encourage you to do better. You know, I think that I always say my wife is my number one fan and number one critic, and it's a fine line that we walk, and I have especially her. Her name is Sheba, to sort of help me negotiate and navigate the crests and the pitfalls.
How long have you been married?
Forever.
Does it feel like forever?
No, so we got married in 98. I lie, we got married in 2008, but we met in 98.
Okay, so you were quite young then when you met her.
Let me take that again. We actually met in 95.
Okay. How old were you?
I was 22.
Okay.
And then we started dating in 98. We both happened to be in the same city in the US. It was fantastic. We'd sort of known each other for a while and had bumped into each other in the streets. We're like, oh, I like that girl. And she's like, I like that guy. Suddenly we found each other in the same place. It was like, wow, kismet. Then we got engaged in 2002, got married in 2008 after having our first child in 2006. We did everything backwards.
Okay, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and then we've been married, for that long.
So, Eric, how has music helped you in your challenges in life?
Well, I actually wrote a whole record about sort of, in 2018, I put a record called Dreams in Stereo, which, I mean, before that, like, I mean, even as the bio you read about me sort of suggests, I was sort of, or I have been, this figure that talks about sort of very things that are kind of outside me, you know, sort of corruption and patriotism. In a sense, I mean, they are societal things, you know, but this record was about a much more personal journey. And it's, music has always been therapy for me, you know. I mean, ever since I was a kid, there were times I wouldn't get dressed for school if there wasn't music playing, you know. With our kids right now, they will not function without some music playing, you know. And I completely appreciate that. But because I know where it comes from, so I've always been the guy who will retreat to some you know, music, some messaging, some stuff that allows me to meditate and kind of think about where I'm going, where I've been, where I am right now.
It sounds fascinating. It sounds like you've been through a real journey through your music, telling stories, and as you say, messaging, because every song tells a story. Where now? What's the next? What happens next with your music?
What happens next? Yeah, that's always a thing. You know, when you're sort of in the midlife of your career, so to speak, you know, there are not a lot of other musicians out there, like in Kenya, who've sort of been doing it 30 years and are still doing it. You
That's
know?
A long time to it's, be it's, in the business.
It,
yeah.
it is a while.
And to be so in the front of the music business for a long time.
Well, yeah, one continues to hope they'll continue to be that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I guess this the stuff that I'm writing right now and the stuff that we're putting out, it's a number of things. I think I've always been very concerned about how we live. You know,
personally or nationally.
Well, I think how we live, everywhere, personally, as families, as communities. At one point, my wife and I bought a house in an estate in Langata, right? And you have a lot of families. Fortunes of the families had changed over the course of the last 40 years. You know, so there's a song that we're putting out called Mama Luka, to the families that have been living the independence dream, you know, people who were sort of there in their 20s and 30s, saw the Kenyan dream crumble before their very eyes. And so how we live, like, are we picking up trash? Are we making our areas look beautiful? You know, if you plant a hedge around your house, you know, suddenly you feel better about yourself. If you pick up trash, you feel better about yourself, you know. And it's that kind of stuff is important to me.
Okay, you sound like you've been thinking about a lot of stuff a lot.
I'm always thinking about a lot of stuff. I'm thinking about where I'm going to take you out for lunch.
Okay, well there you go. I want to know why you've chosen this first song. It's by yourself. It's Hold Me Down. Why have you chosen this song? Why does it hold a special place in your heart?
Well, I mean, sort of when you've been in a long-term relationship like me and Sheba have been. It's one of the things she said to me one time. You know, she said, "You gotta hold me down, or else you're gonna lose me." And that's what the song's about.
Fantastic. Well, let's have a listen.
I surrender. This isn't love, it's torture. Done being champion, done being warrior. Angry winds have blown through my banner. Bloodstained, battle weary. There's holes in my armor. So you better hold me. Again, when once we'd be fine, so you better hold.
Welcome back to Mindfulness Music and More. My second guest today is a producer, sound engineer, composer, and all-round artist. He holds a BA in sound production from SAE Institute, South Africa, and was a sound engineer at Rainmaker Limited, which is co-owned by Eric and his partner, Sheba. Alongside Eric, he has co-produced the theme song, When Darkness Comes, for the Kenyan feature documentary, I Am Samuel. Some of his songs include I Am Not Ready, Baby Don't Go, In Time Will Grow, and I Wish You Would Hate Me. The three words he uses to describe himself are up for interpretation. Rishabh Nanda, welcome to Mindfulness Music and More.
Hello. Well, thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. It's so good to speak to both of you. It's been a while. I've been trying to get you both in the studio. Tell me, Rishabh, how did you get to start working with Eric?
Eric was actually my high school teacher at Brookhouse. Yeah.
Eric, he was a teacher at Brookhouse. I was at Brookhouse, but going way back.
There we go.
Small world?
Eric was my teacher. He took us for songwriting, which I was doing the BTEC music course, and they split up in performance and tech. And tech is sort of more production and studio work. But songwriting happened to be the one course which happened to be compulsory for whether you're tech or... And so I'm thinking to myself, I'm not going to write a song in my life. Why the hell do I need to do this? But the plus side was that I'm going to be taught by Eric Wainaina, so that's kind of cool.
You just did the course because it was Eric, right?
Well, that, and also because I had to, right? Which I'm not complaining now. I'm grateful for that.
I'll bring Eric in shortly and ask him what kind of student you were, because I'm sure he's got a few tales to tell. So why music, Rishabh? What was it about music?
I honestly don't know. I really don't know. It just so happened to be that by the time I got to Brookhouse, it was the only thing that I had my mind focused on, and it was really the only thing I could do.
Okay, I know, coming from an Indian background, and things have changed since I was a kid, but I do remember my mom saying, dance is not a good career for a good Indian girl.
Right.
Did you get that from your parents, or did you get full support?
No. I got full support. Funny enough, the first person who initially did not support this was my sister, and she was like, no, you know, because my sister did the IB program, and she was like, no, you should at least do IB and then maybe go into music depending on how you. And my parents were like, no, he wants to do music, let him do music.
Your parents were enlightened.
I mean, it was cool. It was cool. I certainly did not expect it, but I mean, coming from an Indian background, I did get the occasional, oh, you should still do the business degree. Mm-hmm. And, oh, you should still think about doing something on the side. And while that's all well and good, and I do recognize their concerns, really, music was, and I really do mean this, that music is essentially the only thing I'm actually really good at. And I can confidently say that I'm really good at what I do.
Having left, and I think that's amazing you can say that, because we all have imposter syndrome and we all have these doubts around what we do. Having left Brookhouse and having studied under Eric, what did you then go on to do?
Well, then I went to Cape Town to further my endeavor. And so I studied I did a bachelor's in sound production and engineering at the SA Institute. So that was a 3-year course where I got to be in the studio, and my lectures were 8 hours a day in the studio making songs.
And was that daunting, or was it motivating?
It was, because I mean, the music industry is a lot more advanced, especially in South Africa.
Okay.
In very many aspects, and so some of the things that I was exposed to, I wasn't exposed to in Nairobi.
Yeah.
And seeing some of my fellow sort of peers able to trek that and be able to work in studio environments a lot more fluently than I could, it definitely was daunting. But then you sort of realize that everybody's sort of on their own. Without sounding very philosophical, but everybody's sort of on their own journeys and are sort of in different places when it comes to their craft. And when you sort of come to terms with that and say, okay, I'm good at this, but I may not be good at that, so the best thing to do is really to collaborate. And eventually, by the time you get to the third year, you're all away with all of those.
It sounds like a great experience. And you come back to Kenya and you must have been good, because you start working with Eric and you work on this song, When Darkness Comes. Can you tell me a little bit about the song, but also the film, I Am Samuel? Because I understand that there's a lot around it.
Right, yeah. Firstly, I must say, actually, so Eric offered me a job in my second year.
Oh, wow.
So I hadn't even graduated, and Eric offered me the job at the studio. So Yeah, so by the time I was, I graduated from university, came back to Kenya, and I was immediately in the studio. And actually, one of the first projects that we did was we scored Mugambi Thiga's directorial debut, Lusala.
Yes.
So that was really cool.
Okay.
You're fresh out of university, and the first thing you do is score a film. Very cool. But a second film came along, which was I'm Samuel by Pete Marimi, and Eric was asked to score it. I was one of the recording engineers and sound engineers for those sessions, and so we'd been working on the film for quite a while, and somehow we started writing this theme song, When Darkness Comes, which I think was part of the contract. And it really just was a story of it just happens to be at the right place at the right time. I just happened to be in the studio when Eric was starting to write the song and bring it about, and he asked for my help to produce it. And we co-produced it, and it was cool.
Tell me about I Am Samuel. It's a documentary film that's been banned in Kenya. Why?
Well, it's banned in Kenya because it follows the story of a real life gay couple.
Okay.
In Nairobi.
Who don't live here anymore. They live in Europe now.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And, I mean, how do you get to watch it? You can't in Kenya.
Well, if you can fly it over to the next country and then stream it. That may help.
Okay. That's what I'm doing on my next holiday. I think it's really important to... So how do we change this?
How do we change this? Well, I mean, really, it's just all about dialogue and conversation.
Yeah. I've had a lot of people from the LGBTQ community come and talk on my show openly without being anonymous or anything.
Right.
So, and I think things are changing.
Well, if you ask your colleague, Nadia, how to pronounce it, you actually pronounced it wrong. If you ask her, it's Labagatazak. That's actually how you pronounce it, right?
Okay. I will do better. I will do better. I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Eric. How does music help you with your mental health? And have you had many challenges that you've had to face where music has come in?
Yeah, I mean, I always try to approach music with a very different mindset, sort of different to what I'm I'm listening to, what is being played around me. Funny enough, I don't actually listen to a lot of music by others. I mainly really just listen to music that I'm working on.
Okay.
And my own music. And I think... That may be a little bit vain, but it just allows me to bring a very whole new perspective. How it helps me is that because I'm always trying to push at least my boundary is it just allows me to unlock parts of myself that I sort of never knew I had or never knew I could tap into. Whether this is theoretically or technically, you know, I'm not trained. Theoretically trained in music. I can't play a Western instrument to save my life. But, you know, I found myself at one point writing sort of classical music, you know, and I would do it the way I did it, you know, using my laptop keyboard and my mouse and, you know, with whatever little knowledge I have of harmony and melody and sort of write that kind of stuff. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So do you find that you go, because... Eric mentioned a kind of meditation when he does music. Do you feel that you go into a zone as well?
Yeah. Well, it depends actually on the kind of music that I'm making. Before, like a couple of years back, I was making some very electronic driven, very energized music. Now I'm making a lot more sort of subtle, very textured music. So ambient music and stuff like that. So, and I know ambient music is great for meditation and such, but I don't really go per se into a sort of spiritual meditative zone. It's just I just go in sort of a zone where I'm just really enjoying what I'm doing, and it allows me to sort of just express a lot more freer.
Okay, a very mindful zone. Okay, let's have a listen to one of your tracks. It's ambient music that you've just talked about. It's Cinnamon. Why have you chosen this?
Because I thought it would be pretty cool to play ambient music on radio.
Okay. Let's have a listen. Thank you. Welcome back to Mindfulness Music and More. We have Eric and Rushabh in the studio. I met these two really talented guys at a musical theatre reading here in Nairobi called Pani Puri. Eric, tell me about Pani Puri. What was it? How was it born? And a little bit about musical theatre here in Kenya.
Okay, so Pani Puri is a black-brown love story. It's been a mystery to me that Kenyan Indians and Kenyans don't marry more. Long and short.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that, and I mean marry each other more, you know. We've lived in this country for generations together, been to school together, we work together, we do business together, etc., etc., etc. But there seems to be this apartheid, you know, down to the areas that we live in, you know, and definitely who you're going to hang out with, who you're going to marry, you know. And so it bothers me. And also, for me, it was interesting to see how many Kenyan Indians considered Kenya home, as in like they've never even been to India,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
And so have you been to India, Rushabh?
No.
There you see, case in point, you know. And so for me, I just wanted to investigate this. And from a musical theatre standpoint, and also musical theatre and as much comedy as we can, because sometimes you've got to use satire. We've got to make people laugh at themselves in order to get a very serious message across.
And what was that serious message?
The serious message is get rid of the barriers,
mm-hmm.
you know. I think if you're lying in hospital and you're bleeding to death and you need a transfusion, right, you're not going to ask, was this guy... was he a Kikuyu? Was his name Patel? You know, it's just gonna be right blood group, you know. And you cut me, and I bleed red blood, you know. And that's just how it is for every single one of us.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah,
we're integrated in so many ways, and yet not in marriage, it seems. And there still seems to be that stigma on interracial marriage. Rushabh, what did you feel when you were writing for this particular musical, this production?
Well, I mean, it was the first time I'm writing for musical theatre.
Okay, so can I just say the first thing Rushabh said when we were doing Q&A at the end of this is, I don't even like musical theatre. do you remember that?
I do. And yeah, I went back home and my mom was like, you shouldn't have said that. That is probably going to destroy your career in the future.
Following you.
Yeah.
It's now on radio.
Right.
I think that it's fine to sort of, because maybe musical theatre has not done for you what it's supposed to have done,
right,
you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the thing with this initiative that we've started, is that creating musicals that are relevant to our lives.
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, absolutely, it was my first time writing a musical. I didn't know what to do. All I was sort of like writing, I was just tasked with writing music with Eric. But about the issue, I think it was definitely a learning sort of experience for me, because I know Eric and Alea are already very well versed in this, and they've had far more experience in this than I have. I'm quite literally half their age. That is also me saying that Eric is a very old man.
Let me put my dentures back in before I can answer.
Yeah, and so it really, for me, it was just learning about sort of the prejudices and all of the turmoil that sort of both cultures and sort of people have faced, especially in the context of Kenya. And from there, sort of figuring out how to create a really cool narrative, you know, around it that's compelling, that's realistic, that's also getting to the core of what needs to be said.
Yeah, I think I'll let you in on a secret. I don't like musical theatre either. And I'll tell you...
We are going to change your mind, Shalini.
Well, you did through Pani Puri. I'll tell you why. Because you go to musical theatre and it can all be very twee and all very... dancey, and I love dance and stuff, but it's just not, it's like fairy tale stuff. Whereas Pani Puri was telling me a story that I resonated with. I got it. I could see that. I remember that when I met my first husband, Jeremy, and he was Mzungu, my family didn't accept. Forget anything else. So that whole interracial marriage thing wasn't accepted 30 odd years ago. Has that narrative changed now? And I think that you were telling that very beautifully through music. I wasn't expecting to enjoy it. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. The music was great. The lyrics were great. The words were great. I just thought great. It's a terrible word to use because it doesn't tell you just how much I enjoyed it. But the message was powerful. Do you feel you achieved what you wanted to through that?
We're kind of halfway there.
Yeah.
You're still working on it.
We're definitely still working on it. I think one of the things that we haven't yet addressed is just how deeply ingrained the different biases are.
It absolutely is. It's in, you know, our psyche.
It's in our psyche completely. It's we're having a workshop in the next month or so, and we are going to use that opportunity to really delve deep, right? Why? What are the issues of mistrust? What are the causes of mistrust, right? So it's sometimes it's not only just a racial thing, you know. It's maybe some people feel like they got hurt by sort of, I don't know, like there's this one song that one of the mother is singing about, and she's there like, Indian people do this, you know. And then I'm sure that there's a lot of biases that Indian people have towards, and I say Indian, I mean Kenyan Indian, have towards black Kenyans, you know. And so it's just, what are the unsaid things, you know? What might a black Kenyan want to say to a brown Kenyan, you know, and vice versa? And the challenge with this play is, how do you say all of that and resolve it in 90 minutes? Because, I mean, this thing, we could have like a 7-year production, you know, and, you know, you go home every day and you sleep and you come back and the show's still going on.
It's still going.
And we're still talking about the stuff that happened in the coup or the stuff, you know, colonialism. Yes, yes, yes. But how do we say that all in 90 minutes?
And I think what was really interesting as well, it was very succinct, but you had very sympathetic characters to the couple who were in love. The Indian mom was very sympathetic, but the Kenyan mom wasn't. Mm. And then the Indian dad was... He reminded me of my dad, actually, really unsympathetic to that interracial marriage. I thought it was really... How did you characterize? Where did the characters come from? Who wrote them?
Well, I mean, Aleya, our book writer. But in our first year of writing, in 2017, we started writing parts. So it's been 5 years. But our first session was really just... We had a big whiteboard. And we just started writing down characters and what some of these characters' vices may be, what their prejudices may be, and it just felt natural to go with that sort of those two pairings. I think, but also just historically, there has been a lot of Indian men have been known to impose barriers far more than their female counterparts, and that also has to do with sort of domestic behaviors, you know, the idea of patriarchy. Especially in Indian household.
Yeah.
And so that we're also touching on that. And like Eric said, we're trying to, it's very nuanced. And so we're trying to touch on as many sort of issues as we can, as sort of naturally and organically as we can. Because, I mean, we can essentially, like Eric said, I mean, yeah, it could be a 7-year production, but we can essentially put every single issue in one song and it just wouldn't really resonate at all, then suddenly you just make a hot big mess.
Yeah, which sounds quite Indian, actually. So, sorry, we'll edit that. No, we won't. Let me ask you, what is the next stage for musical theatre here in Kenya? Not necessarily Panipuri, but generally musical theatre.
I think the next stage for musical theatre, which is why we began the Nairobi Musical Theatre Initiative, is for us to tell Kenyan stories or homegrown stories, initially for a Kenyan audience, then a regional audience, and then global, right? I mean, within just this current cohort of writers, we've got 35 writers and we're working on 14 different musicals.
Wow.
In sort of,
some kind of association you've got?
So we started about 5 years ago, and I started off by just calling a bunch of theatre writers that I knew, a bunch of composers that I knew, and just throwing them together. Like if you were a theatre writer and you didn't have a composer friend that you wanted to work with, we literally would speed date people. They're like, okay, Shalini, here's Meet Rushab, talk about your project and we'll come back in 10 minutes, see if you guys sort of gel. And then we'd do that. People would go around the room, sort of meeting different composers and kind of seeing whether it matched. But the stories vary. There's a story about There's a story written by Sitawa Namwalie, who's a poet and an actress, and her story is called Escape, and it's about this prisoner who breaks out of jail and takes refuge under the warden's bed, unbeknown to him that it's the warden's house, right? And he and the warden's wife begin this rapport till she's hiding him from her husband. And eventually, as the play develops, where you see this prisoner was trying to escape, you discover she's trying to escape, and the warden as well, he's done with his job and he's trying to escape as well. It's this beautiful thing told in Shangin hip-hop. It's just, it's fantastic, right?
Yeah.
We've got this other story by Too Early for Birds, who tell these untold Kenyan stories, Kenyan histories, and their stories about these bank robbers who go into a bank, famous bank robbers, Rasta and Wanogo from the 90s. They walk into a bank to rob it, and then it turns out that it was the site of a disco 20 years ago. They get time-traveled, and suddenly they're talking to Patrick Shaw in Wakinyonga from the 70s and 80s.
Crazy.
And it's this crazy, yeah. You know, disco ball of madness, you know. And so I think the way forward with Kenyan musical theater is, I mean, we've all grown up watching Sound of Music or whatever, even God Bless Serafina, you know. But one of the things that made Serafina such an amazing work was that it just, this South African story that no one had seen before in this form. So way forward for musical theater is, what story do you want to tell, right? Can we put music behind this? Can we use music and lyric to advance the plot? That's the whole thing about musicals. It's like, it's not a scene and then some unrelated song. It's that the lyrics of this song advance the story, right? It takes the place of lyric. It takes the place of dialogue. And so what's the way forward? Just more homegrown stuff. And we're ready to pair people together. You've got a story you want to tell. Hey, we're there for you.
It sounds like a really exciting time for musical theatre. I'm so excited to hear and see it very, very early on, I would imagine. Yeah, Eric, let's take you to a desert island for a little while, because it sounds like you've been working very hard.
I'm trying to do a seagull. Those are the waves.
Very good.
Lap, lap. The waves don't say lap, lap, do they?
No, but they could.
I feel I could just let you two carry on.
Right.
Right, yeah. Okay. If there was one book you could take with you, Eric, what would it be?
A 100-year-old man who jumped out of a window and disappeared.
He climbed out, by the way.
That's the one. That's the one. Climbed out of a window and disappeared.
Yeah, why?
Yeah. I mean, I read this book. It took me longer to read it than I should have. It should have, because I was literally reading every page twice. So it's just a very linear story. It's just literally what happens to this guy as he sort of journeys through Sweden. I think it starts in Stockholm. And it's just all these funny incidents that happen to this 100-year-old guy. It was supposed to be his birthday. He's like, I'm done living in an old people's home, and he just bolts, you know. Amazing, amazing story.
Okay, I've never heard of it, so it sounds really good. I'm definitely,
it's fantastic,
get it.
You need to get it.
Okay, and then the song you've chosen is The Rise and Fall of Bossa Nova. Why?
So, I've never actually heard the song. But when you asked me if I'm going to be on a deserted island, right? This song has the Guinness Book is in the Guinness Book of Records for having, I think it's the longest length. It's 13 hours long. I'm not like, look, okay, so fine. Deserted island, cool. Let's choose a 13-hour song. I'm sure I'm going to find a part that I like.
Okay, great. And then your luxury item?
A piano. Obviously, the question is, how did you get onto the deserted island with the piano? But that was not part of the question.
The question was,
you are there.
That's my problem.
That's your problem.
Okay. Yeah.
I think there's so much to discover in music. You know, you think you know some stuff, you know, but there's just so much more. And I think a piano would be a nice thing to be stuck on an island with.
Okay, well, I'll give it to you.
So can I bring in a piano tuner every once in a while? You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
When I'm allowing you to take me to a deserted island and drop me off.
This is true.
With a piano. Okay,
you've got your piano tuner.
Cool.
All right, let's have a listen to The Rise and Fall of Bossa Nova.
Everybody in.
is ours tonight.
Welcome back to the final section of Mindfulness Music and More. And in the studio, I have Eric Wainaina and Rishabh Nanda. And we're going to do a sound meditation because I feel like that is quite appropriate for our guest today. So closing your eyes or lowering your gaze if you feel comfortable to do so. Just sitting with that for a moment as you roll your shoulders back and allow your palms to rest on your knees with the palms upwards, preparing to receive love, energy, and peace. And now bringing your attention to your breath, breathing in and breathing out through your nose. Around us is a deep and varied soundscape. Even silence contains sound. It is continually changing. So take your attention away from your body and begin to listen to the sounds around you. Be receptive to these sounds. Don't go looking for them, just allow them to come to you. Soft, loud, far, near, natural, man-made, in the room or outside, just be aware. try not to label or identify them. Listen without effort, just let it happen. Take a moment to focus on how you're feeling with the sounds you hear. You can do this for as long as you like, but for now, take a deep breath in and release as you slowly and gently come back into your body, back into the room and my voice, and gently open your eyes. Welcome back, guys. So, Rishabh, finally, if I were to cast your way to a desert island and you could only take one book, what would it be?
Quentin Tarantino's novelization of his film Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Why?
Well, number one, it's my favorite film. Quentin Tarantino is one of my favorite filmmakers, and unlike Eric's, it doesn't follow a linear story. And I mean, just imagine Quentin Tarantino's film on book. It's like reading the screenplay.
I'm not a fan
of the film
of
or
Quentin Tarantino's
really?
Work. Yeah,
okay.
I find
enough.
It quite violent. So,
well, I mean, it is. Well, he's addressed that. I mean, but yeah, no, that's fair enough.
Yeah. Okay, well, I might read. I do like to read books that guests recommend because I always think everybody's got such different tastes. And so it makes for my reading to be very eclectic.
In this one, it's actually quite interesting because he rewrites history in his form. So in this one, Sharon Tate doesn't actually get killed.
Ah, okay.
By Charlie Manson. Instead, Charlie Manson's person gets killed.
Okay, might be worth a read then. Okay, and then what song would you take?
Lana Del Rey's Venice Bitch.
Why?
It's my favorite song basically all time. I can listen to that on loop forever. It is just one of the most beautifully written songs ever.
Is that the reason? It's just beautifully written.
Well, that is, it's a 10-minute song. She defied sort of industry rules by releasing it as a single. No label. Her label was not willing to release it as a single, and she still did it. And I love that about the song and the history of the song. But it's just so beautiful in its composition, in its lyric, everything, her performance.
And then what about your luxury item?
A pair of Nikes.
Why?
Because I think, anybody that knows me knows that I don't just like Nikes. I'm not just a fan of Nike. I actually have a passion for Nike. If I got a job at a Nike store, that I would probably do very, very well at it. I can sell you any Nike.
Okay, why?
I don't know.
Even Eric's looking at you as if you've gone a little bit bonkers.
I know this about him.
Yeah, it's just I love what the brand is all about. I love what they've done. Just their designs. It's just imagine the simplest of designs, a swoosh.
Very clever.
It's transformed the entire world. They're certainly doing something right. Pun very much intended.
Very cool. Okay, well, definitely give you that. So, guys, what are you working on together at the moment? Is there something you are working on together?
Well, other than Pani Puri, we did a song called Tell Your Mother, which we released in November of last year. And then we also co-produced a song called Reggae Nice by a group called Television, which features a wonderful artist by the name of Eric Wanaina. It would be great if you could play that Reggae Nice.
Okay, we'll definitely try and play it at some point. And any final messages for our listeners today? So, Eric, what would you like to tell our listeners?
The best way to start is by starting.
That's a quote by you.
Yes, very clever, very clever.
Why do you think that's a clever quote?
Because I think we all worry about how to start.
Mm.
And sometimes you can't have a plan in place. You just need to jump in.
Do you feel like sometimes we are hindered by trying to be perfect? Are you a perfectionist?
I am a perfectionist, and I have a hard time ending stuff. So it's easy for me to say, the best way to start by starting. Some people will say to me, the best way to end is by ending. Yeah, I am a perfectionist, but I at least allow myself to jump in and muck about.
Yeah, because a lot of people fear just that, jumping in and mucking about. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And what about you, Rishabh? Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Yeah, you're an artist and keep on making art.
Yeah, very. You guys are both very succinct. And how can people reach you guys, Rishabh, first?
I'm horrible at social media, but yeah, so the only social media I have is Instagram, and it's at Rishabh Nanda, so just my name.
At Eric Wanaina Music on IG, at Eric Wanaina on Twitter, and my phone number is, just kidding.
Please don't. But are you quite prolific on social media, Eric?
I am, very much so.
Do you think that's the way to be now? Especially for somebody creating art?
I think that is definitely a way to reach your audience. It presents us with our own sort of media outlet, you know, and so it helps us sort of curate what we want to say to audiences, which I think is an important thing.
Fabulous. Well, you've heard how to get hold of the guys, so please do reach out to them on social media. Thank you both, Eric and Rishabh, for being
here.
I'd like to present you with my book, Happiness.
Is
It Simply a Mindset Shift? As a thank you for appearing on the show.
Thank you very much.
To all my listeners, this book is now available at Textbook Center and Raffle Books in Kenya and Amazon worldwide. Please also follow me for more mental health tips, mindfulness, meditations, and lots more on my social media at Just Joom, JustJhoom. Also, to all my listeners, if you or someone you know is struggling with any mental health issues, please do seek professional help, whether that be a counselor or your doctor. You can also open up and share your feelings and mental health issues anonymously without fear of judgment on Bonga, www.bonga.or.ke. This is a safe space where you can start the healing process. I've had an absolute blast. Thank you guys so much. You've been very funny and very informative, and I'm looking forward to dinner with Eric.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. To play out the show, we're going to have Reggae Nice by Television featuring Eric Wainaina, co-produced by Rishabh and Eric. I'm Charlene Bala-Lucas. I'm grateful to all of you for your time today. Thank you for listening. And until next week, stay happy, be mindful.
In a dry and wasted land, there ain't nowhere to hide. And my soul keeps searching for you. I run to your outstretched hands, I'll never falter. Keep my hope and trust.
Fussing and the fighting, things them are troubling, still we not afraid. We stand tall and no foot, the grace of the Almighty Jah will pull us through. Though they bring up all the fussing and the fighting, things them are troubling, still we not afraid. We stand tall and no foot, the grace of the Almighty Jah will pull us through. Bring that confusion.
night.